Marvel's Daredevil episode 4 In the Blood is over, but we're just getting started talking about it here on Post Show Recaps. I am Josh Wigler. I am joined here by a man who is always getting ahead of himself, will never be the head of a major corporation, Kevin Mahadeo. And Kevin, remember that time we said, I don't know if the show could top a guy slamming his face into a piece of metal as far as violence and disgusting this goes?
Yeah.
That was pretty funny of us.
Yeah, we were wrong.
We were wrong.
I was wrong. Just, what are you, John Locke?
Yes, I'm gonna keep doing it.
I sat there in that scene and like
your jaw was dropped. It was great.
And I said oh my god, this show is so violent.
Yeah.
Whoa.
All right. Well, we had a very.
We don't want to get ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
What's happening here?
So we left in episode 3. We left with this very great moment of this poignant Wilson Fisk. This man who is obviously got a softer side, and we see that for most of this episode. That's for the most part the Wilson Fisk we see.
Yeah.
And then the final scene of this episode is the Wilson Fisk we expected times like 1,000.
It's like the other side of that coin, the soft intro versus the hard intro.
The hard exit. Yeah, no, it was wowie wawa, pretty gnarly.
Yeah, just exit level.
Oh, yeah, so we're recording basically. We just watched that. We're trying to get our bearings straight here a little bit.
I'm honestly like, I've seen so much horror movies and violent stuff, and I'm just, it is traumatizing.
It was traumatizing.
That scene was brutal.
Yeah, it was brutal. All right, well, let's talk about this episode. Another great episode of Daredevil. 4 episodes deep. We're In the Blood is the name of the episode, and it's also what we currently are. We are both bathing in bathtubs filled with blood right now.
Yeah, from that ending scene.
Yeah.
Copious amounts of it.
Just nasty, nasty. All right, so we start before, you know, Barry Wilson and Fisk heavy episode. Lots going on with Claire is back. A big episode for Claire. Big episode. Episode for Matt, but also a big episode for the Russian brothers, Anatoly and Vladimir. And we're going to start off with a flashback. Mm-hmm. We're going to flashback to 8 years ago when they were in a Siberian prison, and I guess we're flashing back to the night that they escaped.
Yes.
They're constantly going to reference themselves as the like former princes of Moscow,
yeah.
Which I don't know how literal that is versus how much they were just like real badass, you know, mobsters.
Yeah,
and
I'm not too sure what the obviously ruling hierarchy of Russia is.
No, I mean, like, they are, listen, I've seen Eastern Promises. I don't know about you, but they look tatted up like they are Russian mafia. You know, they've got like the stars and everything. So these are some real hardcore guys, but I don't know what their life is like before this prison, but obviously they've been through some stuff and they're really going through some stuff here. And one of them, it takes me a little while to figure out which is which. I think Anatoly is the one with the long hair. I think Anatoly is the one who no longer has long hair.
Right. Vladimir is the one with the scar, who will probably now have emotional scars from what happened.
Yeah, and so one of them is dragged back into their prison cell and he has snuck a knife. It's actually from the other one, the corpse that also gets dragged in. He helped him get a knife. They're going to use this to escape tonight. Hopefully sharper than a vegetable knife.
Wait. That wasn't a knife, dude.
What was it?
That, I'm pretty sure that was that dude's rib.
Well, that's the second thing.
No, I think he took 2 of them.
They're both ribs.
I think, or was it that he had...
He swallowed
the knife, do you think? And he got it out from internally? I thought he sharpened a piece of bone.
I thought one was a knife and then the other was a bone. But I prefer your thing, so I hope you're right.
Yeah, I thought they were both bones. Like, he broke a rib and sharpened it.
That's crazy. Well, I liked the ribcage knife, and if it's 2 ribcage knives, that's great.
Yeah.
But either way, one of them is a ribcage knife,
for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And that is a messed up weapon.
Yes, it is.
It's pretty gross, but also pretty awesome, and I enjoyed that quite a bit, and just sort of a testament to how hardcore these two are.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, they also escaped prison with 2 rib knives, which... I feel like takes a lot of effort and work.
Yeah. So that was pretty badass, except it turns out that they are not so badass when it comes to dealing with Daredevil. They're actually pretty crappy at that, to the point that, like, when we pick up in Hell's Kitchen now, we see them running away from Daredevil. Like, they're fleeing the scene, and Daredevil is right on their tail. And that's the last thing we see before we go to credits. So that's going to be a big part of this episode is, like, can the brothers... take down Daredevil on their own. And why is it them? I guess are they the muscle of the operation?
Well, yeah, I think they're the muscle of the operation, but they were also very adamant about getting it done themselves. Like, we don't need Fisk. Like, they were the ones who were very upset in episode one.
And they're also, they're the ones who are in charge of the people trafficking, I think.
Yeah.
And that was the first industry, or like the first aspect of this industry, Fisk's industry, that was majorly hit by Daredevil. So I think they've got something to prove.
Yeah, and you know, it's a grudge thing too. He's beaten them twice now, so you know, they want to be able to take him out on their own, like to prove that they could. They clearly have a lot of pride. I think they mentioned in this episode that, you know, they had their pride and they don't want to give that up.
Right. All right, so let's go from...
Or their head, I guess.
Well, they're going to have to give that up, unfortunately. So let's go from there. We go to the credits. Oh, still so awesome. Go from the credits to Claire tending to Matt's wounds.
Night nursing him.
Yeah, she's just night nursing. What are you going to do?
Nursing at night. That's what she does.
Nursing at night is what she does. And she's, you know, she's still talking about how I've seen your handiwork. You know, I've seen the other guys, and the one that you threw off the roof the other night, he's in a coma. How do you feel about that? And Matt says, man, I'll live. I'm good.
Yeah, he is. He's not dead, so good enough.
Yeah. Things are not great for Claire. She's kind of in hiding right now because we don't know if that guy's going to wake up and alert the Russians to her presence. Turns out he will. But she's still at her friend's taking care of her cats.
Which she does not seem to like.
Because she's allergic to cats.
Yes.
It's very bad. So she's allergic to cats.
I know what it's like to catch it for people.
I know. Kevin, another reason why I'm so depressed that you are leaving New York for Los Angeles tomorrow, Kevin, or yesterday, as for the people who are listening.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully you're alive.
Yeah, hopefully I made it. And
hopefully your plane landed safely and everything.
I did not end up on an island in which time fluctuates.
I'm knocking on wood right now. Oh, look at you now making a lost reference. But Kevin, we are recording this on a Saturday night. You are listening to this on a Monday. You are flying to Los Angeles, Kevin, on a Sunday yesterday. Yes. So two thumbs up.
Yeah, I did it. I hope I made it.
All right. And if not, what are your any like final decorations you want to make here on the air?
Avenge me.
Avenge me. Okay, we will. We absolutely will. But yeah, it's Kevin, among the many reasons why I'm sad you are moving, not only is a tremendously good friend of mine, he's also my cat sitter.
Yeah, I'm taking care of his cats.
You tend to stay at my apartment and watch my cats. They are very difficult cats. They are very hard to get to feed, which we see in this episode. Yeah. Claire has a hard time getting their cats to eat, and I turned to Kevin and was like, yep, this is basically my cats.
Yeah.
So Kevin knows all about that. By the way, I'm in the market for a cat sitter if anyone wants to apply. Just let me know. So she's, you know, she's not exactly... she wasn't planning on having to live in the apartment with the cats because she's allergic to cats and she is not doing well, but he needs her to stay here for a little while longer. They're talking more about, you know, what is his plan? What's going on with him? You know, you need to stop getting injured. You need to wear some body armor or something. He says, it'll slow me down. Get the feeling that by the end of this season, he's going to be wearing something closer to body armor.
It's a lesson, right? Like, she's right. It'll slow him down, but it'll also...
He'll just have to compensate. Yeah. So he gives her his number. He gives her his phone so that she can put in her number. And it's a burner.
Yes.
It's a backup
phone.
Which
we've learned from The Wire on how those work.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is correct. So she puts in his number and, I'm kind of digging the chemistry between these two.
I honestly was surprised. Like they seem to be like, so we got Croggy going on, you know, Karen and Foggy, and they seem to be shipping, you know, Claire and Matt.
Cat?
Cat. They seem to be shipping Cat or Blair.
Yeah.
Blair.
Blair. Blair. That sounds like a noise you make when you're like vomiting. Blair.
Like, Blair. Yeah, when cats are Blair.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like the noise a cat makes when vomiting, specifically my cat. Blair.
Yeah. But yeah, it seems like they're shipping these two characters, which was surprising to me. And we talked about earlier where our instinct was, is she Elektra? And same thing, as the chemistry is happening, it's like, Is she Elektra? Like, maybe it's a misdirect. But no, by the end of this episode, it's clearly not.
No way.
Clearly
not. No chance. Yeah. But it is interesting because, you know, if it's going to be a Matt and Karen thing in the end, they're going to need to give us a little bit more on that. Granted, this is episode 4 of 13, plenty right. of time to do it. But right now, if there's a love interest thing going on, it seems to be between Matt and Claire. And I'm good with that.
Yeah, I mean, I have no qualms about it.
I like
it.
The chemistry. I haven't said it enough recently, but I'll just repeat what I said in the first episode. Charlie Cox is a fox. I am a fan of this man.
You married a fox.
I am. My wife's name is Fox. And I am also a huge Rosario Dawson fan, so this is a very sexy couple if they get together, as far as I'm concerned.
Very much so, agreed.
Yeah, so I would be into it. I am shipping Mlaer. Like, hopefully it's not like malaria. And this is a diseased romance. Somebody who, again, has binge-watched this entire season and knows that she is going to die in Matt's arms at some point or something horrible like that that's going to happen is laughing at us right now.
The diseased romance reminds there's more Daredevil thing. Typhoid Mary, but yeah. That's, I don't know, that's neither here nor there on the show, I don't think.
I don't know what you're talking about. all right, so let's move on from Lair. Let's go to the taxi place. Wesley comes and sees that all the Russians are just not doing well, and he says, like, man, looks like, you know, you guys have taken a bunch of pain. You know, next time maybe try ducking.
Yeah. The easiest advice was like, just try ducking, right? And it's just like, go, you know, yeah, F yourself.
Go F yourself, buddy. Freaking Wesley. What a jerk. But yeah, he and Wesley also basically says to them, you know, business is bad. We're talking about you behind your back. You know, Gao and Nobu have both expressed disappointment. We're talking behind your back about how the Russians, they can't even handle one man in a mask. I mean, if he had an iron suit or a magic hammer, maybe that would explain why you keep getting your asses.
References.
Yeah, so it's been a little minute since we've gotten like an outright Avengers call out, but here we're referencing Tony Stark and Thor, which is kind of cool.
Which is very awesome.
This Saturday morning, April 11th, I put out a call for some questions from you guys on Twitter, which obviously we are answering a little bit late. But we did get from very good friends of Post Show Recaps, including House of Cards co-host Zach Brooks and great friend Brendan Fitzpatrick. Both of those guys asked us to talk a little bit about the Avengers tie-ins. We got from Brendan, given the tie-in in episode 1 to the Avengers and the larger universe, do you expect any surprise cameos this season? And Zach had written in, general question, do you think the end of the season will tie into Avengers 2? We talked about this a little bit when we talked about the first episode of, in terms of like, are we talking about the incident being Avengers, the Battle of New York from Avengers, or whatever is going to happen in Avengers 2? I think it is Battle of New York.
I think it is, because actually I don't remember, since we did quick watching here, if it was a previous episode or this episode. I think it was a previous one. When you actually see Ben Urich's office in the background, there is a newspaper that says the Battle of New York.
Okay, there you go.
So I think that answers the question on that one.
Right. But what do you think? Do you think that this season is going to build to anything that's related to Avengers 2, or do you think it'll be separate from that?
I think it's going to be separate. I honestly think it's going to be separate from what's going on in Avengers 2, because you, I mean, it worked to a certain extent on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because you're dealing with S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right.
And like, S.H.I.E.L.D. played so heavily into Cap 2, and Cap 1. But for Daredevil, I don't think tying into Avengers 2 is necessary, and so therefore I don't think it has to. I think if they go into second season, which I assume they would, I'm not too sure how that works into the game plan of what they're doing with the rest of the shows and when season 2 would happen and if it would happen while the other shows are going on or what. But I feel like season 2 would probably be a post Avengers 2 world, but I don't think this is going to build up to Avengers 2. I think they honestly are building their own little smaller scale story world, and to have it tie into the bigger scale world kind of almost detracts, in my opinion, a little bit from Daredevil himself, and makes it tying into something else and being like, oh yeah, this other thing. I think having it be a Daredevil-centric and focused story is what they're going to go for, and I kind of would prefer.
Yeah, and not for nothing, too, I think the fact that this is all released in one day, you know, 3 weeks before Avengers 2 hits, I don't think that they could really do much to tie in without spoiling the movie potentially, and Marvel's not going to do that. So if there's anything that does tie into Avengers 2, I would expect it to be subtle and minor to the point that it'll tease the movie, but it won't reveal anything. So I don't know. And then to Brendan's question about any surprise cameos, I'm not expecting any surprise cameos. I'm expecting it kind of to follow the mold of what we got in this line here about a man in an iron suit or a guy with a magic hammer. Like, I think those are like the winks and nods to expect to the larger Marvel universe. But who knows? I think it could be self-referential to other Netflix stuff. Like, I bet that there's, you know, I bet if we kept our eyes open for anything Iron Fist, we might find some Iron Fist clues, because that's going to be a show on Netflix.
Yeah, and, maybe some, like, weird, like, moments where the shows cross over but not quite. Like, you see a certain scene from a different perspective from, Iron Fist
You know, there are certain characters that have been cast already, like Jessica Jones, who's going to have her own show, has been cast. It's Kristen Ritter is playing that part. Luke Cage has been cast. Yep. A guy named Mike Coulter is going to be playing that character. And I don't know if they were cast after Daredevil was wrapped, or if it was while the show was still shooting, so maybe they could bob and weave in
which
and out.
Which would be, I think, kind of cool.
But that's the goal of what these shows are building towards, is eventually a show that is going to have all of them in the same room together. So I could also see that they would be holding off until the Defenders, but that's probably
a terrible way of incorporating Capper or Iron Man into it, is someone running up to the Madness Tree like, oh man, Cap just went by, did you see him? Womp womp, because he can't.
Oh, Kevin.
I'm sorry, I apologize.
Show yourself out. but I think that's the extent of the cameos that we could expect.
I agree.
I think we could see some Netflix stuff, and I think that we could see some winks and nods here and there, but I don't anticipate seeing too many people from the Marvel movies showing up here, but I'm open to being wrong. You know, I would love to be wrong. And again, Binging Billy is already laughing at us.
wait till that scene when Iron Man shows up and punches Deadpool.
Yeah, so we'll wait for that, Binging Billy. We'll wait for that. Thank you for sticking and listening to this show, by the way. But yeah, so we get that reference here, and, you know, we have Wesley saying to Vladimir and Anatoly, like, you know, this isn't personal, it's business. What's going on here with the man in the mask is affecting delays. It's causing delays in some of our other ventures, and it's unacceptable. And my employer has agreed to, you know, help return you to solid footing by aiding you in certain duties. And they're like, oh, so he wants to take us over. Well, that's not okay. And, you know, Wesley basically says, this isn't an offer. This is an offer. It's not an order. The choice of how we proceed is yours. So talk it over with your brother. We'll be in touch. Because one of the brothers is into this. Yes. One of the brothers is like, we need help. You know, we need an assist. We're not doing well on our own. We need Mr. Fisk. We need the big man.
Yeah.
And the other brother is F the big man. We've got this.
We
do not say his name. Tell Mr. Fisk. Yeah. He's still talking about it like that. So that's going to be a central conflict. And what's ironic is the one who is on board Team Fisk is going to get his...
The one who's head over heels into Fisk.
Yeah. He's in over his head. He's head over heels into Fisk. As he said. So from there, let's go to the diner, and we're getting a little bit more between Karen Page and Ben Urich, and she's basically trying to get him to take this case. She's read a ton of his stories, and he's more or less saying, so thanks for bringing this to my attention, but, you know, thanks for the coffee, but no thank you. Also.
Yeah.
Like, you should get out of this. A story like this is built on credible sources, and I've done some digging into your past activities, implying that Karen is not a credible source. During our preview show, you mentioned some stuff about Karen Page. What are your theories about this comment?
I'm very curious if it's going to tie into what, like, it's weird because there's what happens in the comics and it happens after certain things, you know, that happens in the show. So I'm wondering if there is, it's just a backstory where it, you know, she was hooked on heroin in the comics at one point. I'm wondering if they're going to bring it to that. She had a drug problem and stuff like that. There was also, she filmed an adult video, and I'm wondering if that's going to tie, if maybe that's what it is, but there's levels of what it could be. And I'm wondering if they're going to bring that into the show and be like, oh, straight out from the comics, like, this is what they decide to, you know, pull from the comic books that this is what her past is and she's done some things.
Right.
But it's weird. You contrast that to, like, it's the easiest comparison to make. You contrast to an era where in the comic books, Roy Harper, also addicted to heroin. Heroin, apparently a very popular drug amongst comic book characters.
Okay.
But, was also addicted to heroin, but I don't think they're going to do that in Arrow. I'm wondering if they're going to have a backstory where, you know, the heroin is a thing that that they address with Karen Page.
Interesting.
Like Jack Bauer, who was also addicted to heroin.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's true. Season 3. And then he got over it halfway into the day. Because he's a badass.
That's how he does. That's Jack Bauer.
That's Jack Bauer. He's got no time for a heroin addiction. But she says, I've done some digging too. I've read every big story with your byline, the VA kickbacks, the toxic runoff, the teachers union scandal. You pretty much brought down the entire Italian mob while I was in diapers. Whatever happened to that reporter? And Urich says he got old and a hell of a lot less stupid. So we are getting the sense that he is out on the Man in Black and is out on busting United or Union Allied.
Yeah,
I keep
or whatever they're called now.
Yeah,
again, that company technically no longer
exists. Yeah, that company doesn't exist, but the one that they are now, you know, whoever is behind this agency, you know, they're talking about how like lots of stuff has disappeared, like paper trails, or there isn't really one. And she's like, kind of like, you can't just like disappear a brick and mortar, like a literal brick and mortar industry. You can't just like erase cranes and trailers like numbers on a page. So she really is all in on this. She's like, these guys have to be able, like, we have to be capable of catching them.
Right. Well, it's similar to Matt. Like, she has a strong sense of justice and wants to see justice be served. And it hasn't been for those people. So,
right.
You know, it'd be nice to see them get what's coming to them.
Right. So let's go to the hospital. This is interesting. So Vlad and Anatoly are going to visit their comatose buddy.
They're gonna pulp fiction them.
Yeah, Semyon. And they're going to, he's gonna jab him in the chest with some epinephrine and you know, jolt him awake, probably at the expense of his life, is probably what they're assuming. You know, and they are going to try and figure out what he may have learned about the man in the mask from when he got put into this coma.
He was pushed off a roof.
Yeah, and so before that, Vlad and Anatoly, they're kind of talking about how they are on different sides of this issue, how like, you know, they basically says, we were in prison for 3 years. We went from being princes of Moscow to shitting in a bucket. And I promised if we had ever gotten free, we would never lose anything again, especially our pride. And the other brother is saying, well, that was back when we had nothing. We agreed on everything. And the other brother says, well, we've lost our way together. And the other one says, well, let's find it again together. So they're trying to get back on the same page here.
Right.
They're trying to figure this thing out. Clearly two brothers who love each other very much.
Yeah. I mean, they had a close relationship. You spend 3 years in a prison together and stuff. It forms a lot of bonds.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, like, you know, I like that. When we had nothing, we agreed all the time. And I suppose that's true when two people have nothing. They agree because they both want to get things, and so like they work together. But once you have stuff and you have everything, there's nothing to agree on anymore. What's your goals, you know? So like you can diverge into other stuff. If you both have the same focus and the same goal, you work towards and you agree. And the moment you get that goal, then what?
Yeah. So they wake this guy up. Clearly he's not going to survive very long. They're like, who was it? Who did this to you? Who did it?
The devil.
The devil.
Except I don't know how to say that in Russian.
All right. Well, you should have learned before we got on here.
You're right. I should have learned Russian.
It's the devil. And did he see anything else? And he says, there was a woman. So they are going to go and check Claire's place, but no one is at Claire's apartment because she's obviously cat sitting.
Yes.
Except her neighbor comes by.
Oh, that poor kid, man.
Hola.
Immediately I was like, oh no.
Oh no. Dios mío. Yeah, poor kid. Yeah, he's in big trouble. All right. So we had this final scene in episode 3 with Wilson Fisk. We finally got him in the mix. And now we are, you know, several minutes in episode 4 and still no Wilson Fisk. It's like, come on! I want to get to Kingpin now. So here we go. Now we finally have Kingpin. We are going to get him, you know, doing a little bit of business with Wesley first. He's going to be talking about, like, how to deal with the Russians. Anatoly is the one who seems amenable to working with Fisk. Fisk doesn't want a confrontation. Confrontations can get expensive. He wants to handle this quietly. He talks about a timeline. So they're obviously working towards something.
They're building towards something, yeah. Maybe quite literally building towards something.
Well, but. Yeah, there was, you know, there was in the first episode's final montage, there was like a blueprint or like a city map with a square block, you know, an entire block was blocked off in blue marker.
Yeah.
So something is going on in terms of construction project for sure, it seems like. So the timeline, I don't know, probably somewhere,
13 episodes.
Somewhere around 13 episodes, is that right? And so they seem to be at a reasonable margin is the timeline, according to Wesley, assuming they can settle quickly with the Russians. They are still looking into the masked idiot. They're going to try and figure that out. And Wesley, Wilson wants to go and do something. He's getting out of the car and Wesley wants to come along. And Wilson says, no, this I got to do alone. And what he has to do alone is go inside of 642 Galleries and see the woman who sold him the rabbit in the snow painting. Her name is Vanessa.
Yeah.
And Vanessa is a character from the comics.
You were with me when the moment she goes, oh, I'm Vanessa, I'm going to curse. I just go, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Like, I was shocked because I did not realize. So the backstory I talk about is not going to be a backstory. We're going to see it. It's going to play out and it's going to be... It's going to be kind of cool. I'm very interested to see how they play this out.
So let's set this up. Because as you know, I'm not a huge Daredevil guy to begin with. Although watching the show makes me really feel like I should read all these
really
Daredevil comics. So that'll be coming up soon for me. But for people who aren't familiar with Daredevil, who is Vanessa? As spoiler-free as you can get, like what's her significance to the Kingpin storyline?
Vanessa is someone very close and very important to the Kingpin. And it's one of the times we get to see, I kind of talked about it, you know, previously, the emotional aspect of the character and the sort of sensitive side of the character is what we see with Vanessa. It's the one person that he is vulnerable with, and so it's fascinating because, like, it's interesting that they're showing us this side of him first, as we know what happens later in this episode.
Right.
They open with this more vulnerable side to him, which is a very interesting part of that character because he's not like that with pretty much anything else. So Vanessa's very important to him. I don't want to say too much about where the relationship goes and stuff like that, but like it's a great, great character beat for the Kingpin and what their relationship is and is like. So I'm very excited to see how it plays out. And I was very, very surprised that was Vanessa and how they're going to do what's going to be coming up.
Yeah, very curious to see how they do that. Did you recognize the actress who plays her?
She looked familiar, but did you?
She is Ailet Zurer, is the name of her, and she is from Man of Steel.
What?
Yeah, she was Superman's mother in Man of Steel.
Ah, she was Laura.
Laura Lorvan. Yeah.
I'm a huge Superman fan, so I know these things.
You didn't. You didn't know that she was her, so... You screwed up again, Kevin.
I did.
Screwed it again, Mahadeo. Speaking of screwing it up, it feels like for a second Wilson isn't doing so great as he's trying to ask Vanessa out. Right. He doesn't do this very often. You know, he comes over. He wanted to thank her personally for the painting. It's the last thing he sees every night before he goes to bed, which is either very romantic or very sad.
I'm hoping for the former.
Yeah, but I think it's the latter. And he wanted to thank her personally, and he also wanted to ask her out for dinner, and she says, I'm the only one working here tonight, and he says, that's okay. See you later. And she's like, that's it? You know, you're not going to offer to buy every painting here so I can close up early? Because someone tried that once.
Which, bold move.
Bold move. Obviously, expensivo move. We've got to be a pretty high roller for that. But he kind of saunters up to her and says, a woman that can be bought isn't worth having.
Which... That is fantastic.
The way he says that is like kind of chilling. And she says, you know, she kind of smiles and she says, well, I'm partial to Italian. And he says, we agree on more than art. I too am partial to Italian, specifically the pizzas.
Yeah, yes, you are. You love your pizzas.
Yeah, if Wilson Fisk, if he took that to mean, all right, I'm just going to take you to an awesome pizza place, I would marry that man.
Well, financially, you'd be doing great afterwards.
I'd be doing great. And I would just stay clear of cars.
Yeah.
Just stay away from cars. Look at art, eat pizza, no cars.
No cars.
But looks like they're going to go on a date, and that's great. All right, so let's go to Claire's apartment. The cat's not eating. She says, "Eat it, you little bastard," which is definitely something
that a lot. Yeah,
you've said to my cat, and I say to my cat almost every day.
Eat! Why won't you eat?
Come on, Bella. Gosh. Yeah. The backstory is I have two cats. One is very fat. One is not. One is very small. Fat cat eats everything. Small cat eats very little and is very picky and takes her time before she eats. And it's like, it really is like a ticking time bomb situation where it's like, Bella, you've got no time to be dicking around here. Because you just got to eat your food. He's coming.
Fat cat will come.
He's coming, and
push her out of the way.
I can't stop him every time. So that's what it's like in my life, everybody. That's what life is like when I'm in my underwear blogging for a living. That's
trying to fight away cats and feed one and stop feeding the other. It's
difficult. So that was really funny. I laughed a lot about that, and then I stopped laughing when somebody's like at the window at the place where Claire is looking in on the cats, and clearly it's not going to be good. Not going to be great. But we go from that to the police precinct. Obviously, Matt and Foggy are working. You know, their clientele seems to be expanding to some degree.
Right.
And Foggy tells the story about how his mom wanted him to be a butcher. It's this story about the butcher and him wanting to be a lawyer, which apparently he tells a lot. He's like, I could be carving my own corned beef. I could be making my own pickles. I could have a shop of my own. It does sound appealing.
It does. Maybe we should have been butchers.
Listen, is it too late? I guess it's a little late for now.
I'm gone.
Yeah, you're gone.
By the time this is
up. You're already gone. But no, it's funny. I really like how Matt's like, you always tell this story about the frickin' butcher.
Which sets up something great.
Yeah, to the point like this is not going to be the last time he tells the story in this episode. I hope it keeps coming up. I hope it's in every episode from now. But I thought that was funny. And, you know, Foggy's like talking about, I wonder if we should have gone with, you know, the big wigs, Landman and Zach. You know, they had free bagels every morning and furniture that didn't smell. And they had elevators. Elevators are so cool.
They are. As people, if you've lived in a walk-up, you know elevators are very
totally cool. True. But elevators are dope. And they, you know, regardless, Matt says, look, what we're doing here is good. We're making a difference. And then he gets a phone call. And it's a phone that Foggy is not familiar with, but it's the burner. It's the burner that Maddie is using to communicate with Claire. It's the Blair phone.
Blair.
And he picks up the, he looks at the phone and Foggy's like, it's a girl, isn't it? You have a new phone just for your girl. I'm doing something wrong. My life sucks.
Poor Foggy.
But it turns out that Matt's life is the one that really sucks because it's Claire calling because she's being attacked, and we go from like the phone call to
a very
Claire.
Taken moment. Liam Neeson, where you know you just hear his daughter being pulled from under bed and her screams and the voices.
Good luck. But she's getting dragged away, and it's not very good. And Matt just dips. He folds up his walking stick. He
throws it like into a trash can. Basically,
he just runs. He bolts. He gets to the apartment. He's too late, unfortunately. But he does his cool thing. He does his cool trick where he can listen to stuff. And he, you know, he collects himself and he leans out the window and he's like, you know, twitching with his ears and trying to figure out what's going on. And he can hear Russian. And he can, I think, can he hear her scream? He can certainly hear Russian.
Yeah, he can hear the Russian. I think he can hear her muffled scream because she's just being locked in the trunk at the time.
Right, but unfortunately, he can't get to her on time.
Right.
Like, he can't find her when he needs to, and so he's kind of without a bit of direction on where to go to find Claire.
I do really love the scene where we do see him take off. Like, it's such a great moment.
Just it was bolting.
So bolting and, like, looking real smooth with it. Like, when to go back to the movie, not to bring up memories like that, but, you know, it's all CG. You have this, like, weird, like, bouncing inhumanly off walls and up, you know, stuff. But in this, it seems very natural. I mean, heck, if you watch action movies, you see Jackie Chan do it all the time. But it's cool because it felt natural. It felt like you see this guy doing actual moves and bouncing in a way that looked realistic and looked awesome. And you see him also out of breath at the end because he is tired.
Yeah.
Because, like, any human who does that will be tired afterwards.
Yeah, we haven't, I mean, well, in this, we haven't really talked a lot about how, like, the wounds carry over.
Yes.
You know, we saw with Karen Page, like, she still has, like, a bruise on her neck from, like, when she was being attacked in
prison.
He was
bleeding at one point from an old wound.
When he was stalking Wesley in the last episode, he was bleeding from his old wounds. The wounds carry over.
Yep.
I think that's cool.
Which is great, yeah, because that's what wounds do. He's not Wolverine. You asked about whether or not he heals faster than normal humans, and he doesn't. He's just like a normal person. He heals at the same rate. So, you know, that's why Claire's like, body armor.
No, that's just, it's a cool aspect to the violence in this series. Like, not only is, like, are the action scenes beautifully shot and choreographed and, you know, realistic in terms of, like, it takes multiple punches to bring somebody down. Yes. And things like that, but I like that the fallout, like, the subsequent days and, you know, the subsequent hours and everything is just like, that really hurt. Yeah, I'm still recovering. I like that. Even like, you know, the hangover the next day was a good touch for Foggy. But just,
we've all been there.
Yeah, sure. But this idea of like, it hurts the next day. Yes. It hurts the next day. It hurts the day after that, yeah, potentially.
I mean, a lot of times it gets worse as time goes before it gets better.
Yeah,
even,
so I like that. I thought that was cool. So anyway, so Matt's going to have to figure out how to get to Claire. Before that, we're going to an auction. So is this like a police auction? Like, they're auctioning.
Well, they're auctioning. I don't know if it's a police auction or if it's, I thought it was the company that now owns or became, you know, what, United Allies.
But it seemed like there was like a bunch of different companies involved in the auction. Like, I don't know that it was just that. And if so, then, you know, what was her goal here? Like, I feel like she was looking to see if they were going to get actual Union Allied stuff up.
Yes. So, and I think she was trying to look and see who was bidding on it to try and identify them.
Right.
And she was kind of like sketching the person, which is interesting to show like what they look like, but obviously she doesn't know their names.
Right.
So, you know, I think it was she was trying her best to do investigating.
Right, but she's the one who gets caught.
Yes,
by Urich.
Ben Urich, yeah. In a very, very awesome scene.
Yeah, Ben Myrick is there. He's there and he says, like, stop what you're doing. Don't turn around. and you know, he's like, listen, don't you know, don't just like not bid on something, buy something. She's like, I can't pay for it. Figure it out. And then meet me at the diner when you're done and we'll talk. And she's like, how'd you know I was here? Ben? And she turns around and he Batman her.
That's exactly what we said happened. Yeah, we're like, he just Batman her. I love that. That really is the best definition for that thing. Where it's just like, whoop, gone now.
He Batmaned.
Yeah,
Ben Urich, the Batman of journalists.
That needs to be, you know, people talk about Batmaning where they did the, you know, like hanging upside down or
is that what? Oh, I guess that was.
Yeah,
Batman.
You remember that, right?
Which, but Batmaning is like
Batmaning,
a true Batmaning. It's kind of like the Irish exit where, yeah, like you disappear in the night without saying goodbye to anybody. But it's like, when you've done that, when someone was looking at you 1 second, and then they turn away, and then they turn back, and you're gone.
And that's what, like,
a Batmaning has to happen, I would say, within the wingspan.
Yes.
The time span of, like, 5 seconds.
5 seconds. And that's, I would love to see those videos of people getting Batman,
yeah,
by someone just, like, poof,
yeah,
I was exiting real quick.
It was pretty, you know? It's pretty good. So he Batmans her, and we'll get a little bit more on Urich and Karen in a little bit. But before that, Claire, she's at the taxi place. She's getting dragged out of the trunk. You know, she's fighting back as much as she can, but it doesn't look very good.
Yeah, that's the scene where I was like, oh, okay, not Elektra, because Elektra, if you read the comics, you know she's...
She would have burst out of the trunk and just like...
just beating
these people.
Yeah.
So there's no way that's coming. Binging Billy is... she's totally Elektra. Ah, is Binging Billy the mustache-twirling villain?
That's the one, right?
Yeah. Curse you, Binging Billy. So Matt's gonna have to figure out how to get to Claire quick. Good thing he thinks to go back to her place to see if like they got any clues there. And Santino, the neighbor, is there, and he's been beat
up a little bit.
He gave her up, but it's not his fault. Matt says it's not your fault, it's mine. This I thought was kind of unbelievable, though. This part was like the on a show about a guy who has super hearing and like great sense of touch and all of this stuff and smell and everything. The most unrealistic thing that's happened for me so far is when Matt asks Santino, what was the name of the taxi company you saw these people drive into? He's like, yeah, it was Vela's Taxi. You remember that name?
Yeah, I mean,
it's a yellow cab. You're in New York. You just see yellow cab.
It's true.
And or unless it's like one of the green cabs that takes you to all
the boroughs. Yeah.
If you can remember a taxi cab's name, you're a better New Yorker than I am, you're a super New Yorker.
Here's the caveat, though, right? He remembered the taxi cab name after he got beat the crap out of by these people. I feel like that might trigger something to be like, well, I'm going to look at the name of this car, at least. So I will give him the benefit of the doubt in that regard. Normally, I would agree 100%. No New Yorker pays attention to the name of the cab or a taxi. I took a cab over here, and I learned that those yellow cabs had a specific name, which I've already forgotten.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, earlier today when I came over.
But I guess no one punched you in the face first, and you didn't study the
exactly.
taxi.
If that happened, I would have been like, oh, I'll remember this name now.
Yeah, I suppose.
But yeah, so I'm gonna give the kid the benefit of the doubt here.
Still, to me, it's just kind of like, no. No, you're not going to remember that. But okay, let's move the plot along. Like, I'm not going to hang up on it
you're
too
like,
much.
Ah, let that one like, slide.
You know? Like, I kind of like gave it like the Larry David.
No,
let's
just
going to
say Larry David.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So let's go to date night with Wilson Fisk and Vanessa.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they're talking about how, you know, she didn't grow up here. What gave it away? The accent. You know what he's doing that I'm wondering if you've got any insight into? But he has, like, this button or this pin that he keeps stroking. Have you noticed
yeah,
that?
Yeah, his like almost like his cufflink.
What is that?
I was trying to pay attention to that, and I'm not too sure, actually, I have to say. I've been trying to, like, because they showed it in, like, the close-up in, I think, episode 3, the beginning of episode 3, when Wesley got into the car, they showed it, and, you know, I should have had the foresight to pause it to try to pay attention to it. But a brief glimpse there, and then we see him at dinner. We kind of see it, but they don't do a close-up, I don't think. And, yeah, so I want to look and see what that is. I'm trying to pay attention to it to see what
the
significance
is. All right, well, let's keep an eye on it. For now, I'm going to call it the King Pin.
Oh, wow.
And I'll show myself out.
Oh, yeah.
Podcast is over.
I love puns, and I am
and I'm out on that. I'm out. So he starts to talk about how he grew up here. He says, when I was a kid, I used to dream what it would be like to live somewhere far away from Hell's Kitchen, somewhere beautiful. She asks him, what made you stay? And he says, I didn't. When I was 12, my mother sent me to stay with relatives. They had a farm in the middle of nowhere. Those were good years. She says, but you came back. And he says, yes, time and distance, they afford a certain clarity. I realized the city was part of me. In my blood. In my blood, I would do anything to make it a better place for people like you. And she toasts to a better place. And Kevin, I will toast to you to a better place, as you embark on your journey.
Yes, let's hope so, that it goes better.
We're just drinking water, by the way. We're not drinking the sweet red that Vanessa and Wilson are
hilarious. Having. Hilarious, I think it's bad luck to toast water, so.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I killed Kevin. Yeah, I'm a bastard. You bastard. Hopefully you're okay. All right, cool action scene alert.
Yo.
Action scene alert, awesome action scene alert. It's Daredevil action scene time.
It is, but here's the thing. Out of all the action scenes, I liked it, but it's the first one where I was just like, oh, this is very Batman. It's the first one that I felt they kind of really embraced a Batman-y aesthetic,
know,
I guess.
Excusing the dock scene from the third
scene
of the entire series.
But we kind of talked about how it just took place in the house, but his fighting style is so very, very
No, it's true. It's true. And I felt the same way. I mean, you know, the thing, you know, that's kind of like the fun trick you get to play when you're talking about Batman is like he, you know, Batman is almost cooler when you see the results and not the methods, like when you see like who's left behind, you know, when you see like the bad guys strung up and how the hell did that possibly happen. And I, for me, the pleasure of Daredevil so far has been watching him just like punch a guy 6 times in the face and then kick him and then punch him 6 more times and then
do
that
so
to the other
and
guy.
And being so tired, he falls over to another room.
So yeah, I mean, like there's a tiny bit of stuff like that in this scene, but a lot of it is like throwing, you know, objects from a distance and
pulling people back from the shadows and stuff, which is cool. Again, very cool, but
it's cool. Yeah. But I hope that that's not the norm, you know. Yes. And I totally get and appreciate the need to shake things up on the show, and this certainly shakes things up, but. I would prefer it to be, you know, I'd like to see it in the camera. Like, I'd like to see it on the scene.
Maybe in this particular one, they reserved the action because they were saving the action for the end.
Yeah,
like,
maybe.
Honestly, it could just very well be that.
Yeah, because this is probably, I think fair to say, least action-packed episode of the series so far.
Yes, yes.
Until the end.
I would say so.
Until the very, very end. So he goes in, he gets the lights off, the mobsters have been torturing Claire. Turns out, if she gives up any information, they're going to kill her. That's the standing order. So good thing that he came, that Mike Murdoch came when he
Mike
did. And also good that she doesn't know his real name because she had nothing to give up. I hiccuped. And, you know, I like when the lights go off and she starts cracking up. She's like, you want to know his name? Ask him yourself. But he saves her. It's great. I'm here for you. I'm here for you. I have you. It's what I say to Kevin every night.
Yes.
And I'll just have to text it to you now before you go to bed.
I have you.
I have you.
Has me.
Yeah. It's just always a very comforting thing, I imagine, here. All right. So let's go to the Square Diner with Karen and Ben. They're meeting up again. She got some fax equipment, some office equipment for $3,500. She's like, I charge this to the law firm and I'm probably going to get my ass fired for it. And he's like, well, beats the alternative. And I agree.
Yeah.
The alternative being that people would probably notice that she was like snooping around and they would have her killed.
Yep. She'd be dead.
She would be dead. But she's like, but I thought you weren't interested in this. And he said, no, I said you should move on.
Yeah, which I love that moment. I thought that was great. He's like, no, I said you should drop it. And there wasn't anything about myself. And I was like, Benny Rick.
Yeah, bazinga. I thought that was good. And Yurik is trying to like kind of like give her like just like the cold hard facts about what this looks like. Basically, like, we can do this. Like, you can be working this with me. You can be my source, but... just so you know, you read my articles, the guy that, tipped me off about, the toxic runoff, I fished that guy out of the river a month later. The person who was helping me with the teachers union, he moved out of the state after flyers went up saying he was a pedophile. So these people, they underestimated what people in power will do to stay there. I didn't think that you were going to make this same mistake after what happened to you. You know, what happened to her was almost getting killed twice. Karen pries a little bit. She says, what about the woman from the articles about the VA? What happened to her? And Yurik says, she met the worst fate. She married beneath her to a workaholic who never appreciated her.
Yeah, which kind of like, you know, what we were talking about earlier.
In the last podcast,
We what happened and
to Ben's wife, and it seems like they are probably estranged. And since she married beneath her, isn't, you know, married to somebody who can... pay for the treatment that maybe she needs right now.
Yeah, which, you know, again, is tragic because he clearly cares about her, you know, and it sucks. And like,
yeah.
But it's tough. I mean, being a journalist, you know, it's tough. The hours you work and stuff like that, like doctors experience the same thing. Certain professions, you know, they dominate a lot of time and it sucks when things like that happen, you know?
Yeah, so very sad, and just like another little bit of insight into who Yurik is and what makes him tick. But he's gonna work with her. They're gonna work together. They got to be smarter than the bad guys. Don't come to the office. Don't tell anyone about that. And if this doesn't work, get up and get the hell out of my life. But she's in. It works for her. All right, cool. First order of business: sign that agreement.
Which is great.
Sign the agreement to get all that sweet money. And she's like, "What? But then I can't talk about it publicly." He says, yeah, well, but I'm not signing anything.
Which, again, another awesome Ben line.
No,
like,
but that's,
I love it.
That's great. Why not? Like, take the money.
Yeah.
Take the money. Don't worry about it. Take the money. Enjoy that sweet money. Make them feel better about you. And that's step one.
Yeah.
He's like
almost putting himself in the line of fire in this, but, you know, journalists tend to do that a lot.
No.
It's sometimes funny. Literally as well.
Not me.
Yeah, right.
I stay at home blogging in my underwear. So back at the taxi company, like, it's just, carnage,
right.
Mayhem. Everybody's just, like, nursing their wounds. And Vladimir and Anatoly, who are not there, they come, and they see it all, and they find out, well, the man in black was here and screwed us all up. And Anatoly says, we need Fisk's help. We need this guy. I know you don't want to do it. I know you don't want to go, so I will go and I will bow for both of us.
Yeah.
I will go and I will make the deal. Wrong answer.
Yeah.
A phone call would have been great.
We didn't know at the time. It's funny because, like, so this scene happens and it's not till later, but we'll talk about it, like, when we get to when he shows up.
Well, it's going to happen right now.
Yeah, like, immediately when he walks in, mistake.
Yeah, it's a really bad call. This guy just like barging in the middle of a restaurant. Like, this is a guy who doesn't want people to know his name.
Yeah.
Why on earth would you think that it would be okay to barge in on dinner?
Like,
barge in on a date.
Yeah.
It's really bad. Supa Inglese. I just looked this up, the dessert that they're eating. I've never heard of this before.
I have not either, but
We're looking at Google images right now, Kevin and I are. It looks like it's like a custardy layer cake type
thing. I've eaten this. I did not know, because I actually went to Italy not too long ago last year.
That's right.
For a wedding, and I have had this there. Did not know that's what it was called, but it is quite delicious. It's
delicious.
It's accurate.
But when Vanessa's saying, isn't that what they have at children's birthday parties? I'm like, what children's birthday parties?
What? You wanted that?
Why wasn't I invited? Why didn't anyone invite me to have Supa Inglese?
Did you just become your dad?
No, I became someone else. But he said he loved it as a kid, probably too much.
Yeah.
This was like a fun self-deprecating fat joke. As a fellow chubster, I appreciate these self-deprecating
But a bit of a hide, because as we see,
it's not all pudge. There is definitely some muscle underneath that. This guy, Anatoly, he comes in and he barged in. And said, we graciously accept your offer. And Fisk says, we gotta go. Dinner's over.
Let's go.
No Supa Inglese.
Yeah, we're out.
We're out. We're
gone. Check, please.
Check, please. You gotta go. Wesley, get this man a car.
Yeah.
Because I'm gonna need to kill him with it.
I'm gonna literally kill him.
Wesley, make sure that the door works.
Yeah.
Make sure it has a really powerful, heavy door. So he leaves. Karen, we get a quick scene with Karen and Foggy, a Kagi scene. Been a little while since we've had some Kagi action.
But a payoff for earlier, because this is a great where he pulls out the butcher store.
Well, yeah, he wanted office equipment. Yeah. He wanted office supplies. Karen,
he wanted a real office.
Yeah, Karen thought she'd get in
trouble. I want to be a real
Karen owner. Thought she'd get in trouble for offering, you know, for charging it to the company card, but he loves it.
Yeah.
He loves it. He turns and says, did I ever tell you that my mom wanted me to be a butcher? And you know what I told her? Yeah. I just hope we keep hearing that.
Yeah. It would be a great running gag.
Yeah. All right. Some more Mlayer scene. So the Mlayer scene, this is good. He is now stitching her up. He is her cut man.
Yes.
How about that?
Most as he said, he has experience with it because, you know,
he used to patch up his dad. So they're starting to open up a little bit more. He's starting to reveal sides of himself to her. His dad was a boxer, took a lot of beatings. He takes after him and that.
Yes.
He feels really terrible about what he does. And she's like, you know, it's fine, but tell me that this is worth it. Tell me you've got a plan, an end game, anything. And his end game is, I'm just trying to make my city a better place.
Yeah.
That's it. And she says, I think it's gotten a little more complicated than that by now. And, you know, he's feeling pretty down on himself. He thinks he's just making things worse. But she's, like, on his side, despite all of what's happened. She says, tell that to the boy you saved from the Russians and everybody else you've helped. And he says, what about the people I've gotten hurt? And she says, feel my heart, and not with your ears. With your hand.
With your hand.
Put your hand on my chest.
Like a normal person.
Okay. Go right ahead.
Josh, no.
No, this is fine. And he says, you're scared, obviously. And she says, because I am more than I've ever been in my life, and I'm not alone. But you can do something about it. You could do something for all of us, Mike. Matthew. The name is Matthew.
Which we talked about this earlier, where I kind of wish I heard to be like, I was close.
Yeah.
Like,
close.
Oh, I was at it. I was right there.
Yeah. You're not the only one with the sharp senses.
Wah-wah.
Yeah. So that's the final Mlayer scene, and I'm shipping Mlayer.
Yeah, understandably. I mean, we have a word for it.
Yeah,
Mlayer.
Mlayer. So I hope that works out. But as Binging Billy already knows, it did not.
Yeah, if only
out.
You know.
Worked out horribly. I hope that it works out. All right, so Wilson is going to walk Vanessa home, and that was a bad taste to leave the date on. She's not sure if she wants to see him again.
Well, it's a very, like, when you said, we take your offer, we accept, your gracious accept, it's immediately, like, alarm bells, warning.
Yeah, you know, she's not so sure what that was. Like, she went out with him, not because of gestures or money or because it was a good restaurant, but because she thought that there was something different about him, and now she's not so sure it's a good thing.
This is... It's not great, but it's also sort of in line with what the relationship is sort of like.
In the comics?
Yes. Okay. This is, you know, there's more to it. There's a lot more to it.
Well, you know, she says she's not sure if she wants to see him again. That's kind of how they leave it. And he looks like the guy in front of the rabbit in the snowfield.
You know,
he looks like the Wilson Fisk that we saw in his first appearance. Just like, kind of has like this... You know, like this like childish look to him where he looks like a little kid who is, who has never talked to a woman before. The kind of person who like just like looking at his face and how he looks in this moment, you wonder like, how is he this kingpin of crime?
Right.
Like, how is this the guy?
It's almost like you see him and you see him how he is outside of this with business decisions and what he's about to do soon after this bad day. But like, you see him here, and it's kind of like what you said. It's like he's a boy who doesn't know how to talk to girls yet, and you know he's uncomfortable. He's kind of shy and awkward, and like doesn't you know want to make sure he's saying the right thing, and is devastated when it's not working out.
Yeah. So yeah, she goes in, and obviously we know that it will continue. We'll see her again because she's an important character from the comics, and this seems to be an important part of Kingpin's storyline this season. So we'll definitely see Vanessa again. All right. Here we go.
Oh,
let's get to it.
Get
to this freaking fantastic final scene of this episode, where Wesley and Anatoly are in the car, and you know, he's like, you know, a phone call might have been appropriate, and he says, but I wanted to speak with him in person. I wanted to try to put the past behind us. And I thought Wesley has a really great line here.
Yeah.
He says, you know, the car stops, and Anatoly's like, why is the car stopped?
almost like an Ole Yeller moment.
Yeah.
Like, why is the car stopped?
Yeah.
What's like, going on? Yeah. Are we going to the field?
Yeah. I can see the rabbits, Lenny. I can see the rabbits, George. Yeah, but, you know, Wesley says, they say the past is etched in stone, but it isn't. It's smoke trapped in a closed room, swirling, changing, buffered by the passing of years and wishful thinking. But even though our perception of it changes, one thing remains constant. The past can never be completely erased. It lingers like the scent of burning wood. And like, I keep thinking that like someone is just like going to like turn around from the front seat and shoot Anatoly in the face. Like, there is officially no question that this man is dying.
Yeah, he is definitely.
This guy is dead. This guy is dead.
But I'm with you. I expected like gunshot, anything.
And even to the point when Wesley gets a phone call and he says, "Yes, sir, passenger side."
Yeah.
Like I thought, okay, so he's just gonna get like blasted through the window.
We were wrong.
And Anatoly says, "Oh, was that him?" And Wesley says, "Mm-hmm, yeah." And he'd like to have a word with you. And the word is, you embarrassed me. You embarrassed me in front of her. And it results in lots of headbutting, lots of face butting, lots of punches, lots of getting thrown around. Anatoly's slashing with a knife. He slashes part of Wilson's clothes. That's not enough.
Well, here's what I caught. So what I think I caught. So when he slashes his clothes, though, it looks like his suit has body armor underneath.
Oh, really?
Him. I thought that's what it was. He tried to cut him, and it didn't go all the way.
Interesting. I didn't notice that. That's cool.
That's what I thought, which is
awesome.
Smart. Very, very smart.
Smarter than Daredevil.
Yeah.
at least for now. But yeah, and then it results in...
just a beat down.
Madness. He puts Anatoly, like, he punches him and puts him in like... You know, he puts his head up against where the car door's bottom is going to slam through, and he's just going to slam and slam and slam and slam and keep slamming and slamming.
We talked about the sounds, right?
Well, Kevin and I watched this on Netflix with the closed captioning, and the closed captioning, when that happens, is squishing.
Yeah.
It's the noise.
That is the description, and it is spot on.
It is gross. Yeah, and then the body falls. Headless.
Like, he crushes his head and decapitates him
with
the car
door. Which is crazy. Absolutely crazy. This is from Alex Kidwell. Our buddy of ours, Alex Kidwell, on Twitter wrote it and says, where does a car door fall in the power rankings of things used to decapitate someone? And I mean, like, right now, to my mind, I'm thinking of a lot of different shows that I could talk about that I don't want to spoil, but for one, I'm thinking about a severed head on a tortoise. I'm thinking about a certain main character in a certain first season of a certain show that is going to get beheaded in a really shocking way. I'm thinking of
that same show in the fourth season of a character that comes in a big fight.
That character's
scene.
Head is getting exploded. I'm thinking of Jack Bauer has severed a few heads in his time.
Yep.
It's been very good. This is pretty good, Alex.
I mean, personally,
I don't know where the power. I don't know about the power rings. We're very close to it, but in terms of the shock value,
it's
you know, when that body fell.
When the body, yeah, it's First, I thought it was just like...
Yeah, I thought that like he would eventually stop and like clearly stop. He'd be dead and be beaten to death. But no, he...
He decapitates him with that car door.
I mean, pretty high, Alex. Pretty high.
For me, like top three times of decapitating. It's like
on
number,
a TV show?
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, it's the shock value, the intensity, the usage, right? Like you think of the craziest things used to decapitate people and car door, not usual, which makes it very interesting.
Yeah. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. It's just gross. And, you know, again, we spent a lot of time at the end of the last podcast talking about the first appearance of Wilson Fisk, and the first impression you get of him is really surprising. He doesn't seem very dangerous. He seems very vulnerable, very emotional, somebody who, like, you can connect with and you can see as, like, kind of this guy who really appreciates art and is easily moved and is just, you know, just has, like, a thin skin for such a big guy.
Yeah.
For a guy who's been responsible for moving and shaking so much crime, is involved, however directly, like, hands-on or just being aware of it, with a people trafficking trade. You know, how is this the same guy? Okay, so now I believe that this guy is the guy.
This is the guy.
And it's really cool that, like, most of the episode we spend with him is still that guy looking at the rabbit in the snowfield.
Yep.
And now turns out that rabbit is jacked out of his mind and is capable of ripping your head off with brute force and a car door. But it's cool because, you know, I do remember from, like, the Spider-Man cartoons about, like, how physically tough, you know, Kingpin was and that. And he wasn't really that tough in the Daredevil movie with Michael Clark Duncan. I mean, he was, you know, Michael Clark Duncan, who was a very physically built man. But I didn't feel like he was dangerous in that way. But you were talking about how he is. Like, there's certainly a good amount of that.
And you see it here. Like, this is, from that scene, you can definitely see...
Yeah, you get it.
Yeah, like, how strong he is. And if Daredevil were to go against him, he would have trouble.
Yeah.
Like, it's clearly, like, he is a physical presence. You know, the character had a presence from the moment he appeared. And this lot of, like, it's a... It's not even like a punch to the face of shock. It is a car door to the head over and over again until your head's gone from your body. That's how much of an impact he made in this moment.
No, but, you know, forgive the pun in advance, but I think it's apt. It's like, what's going to happen when blind rage meets blind rage? You know, like, because that's what this was. This is a guy who was just seeing red.
Yep.
What's going to happen when he sees red, when he sees Daredevil?
Yes.
You know,
Daredevil has anger issues. These
are both pretty angry dudes.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, Matt's skill is that he's, you know, agile, he's quick, you know, he's usually the fastest guy in the room. He can take a beating pretty well. But, you know, especially if Wilson is wearing body armor, if that is the thing, you know, this is a guy who looks like he could take some punishment.
Yep.
And he can dish it out. And their skill sets, when matched against each other, will be really cool to see. Mm-hmm. Are there, you know, again, like I said, like, I'm not a big Daredevil reader to begin with. What are, like, are there iconic fight scenes between the two of them from the comics that you can think of?
Certainly, there are iconic fights and iconic moments that happen in two of them.
Physically.
Physically, yes. Physically, for sure. And there's a lot that goes on with that character. I mean, usually the bigger, I don't say the bigger physical threat, but Daredevil fights, like Bullseye, there's a few more iconic fights. Like Kingpin and Daredevil, it's a physical match, but it's also like a psychological match. You know, because they both want different things from what the city is. Bullseye is just a lunatic.
You still gotta imagine these guys have to trade a punch this season.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh, they're gonna fight the crap out of each other, yeah. I'm sure. And I'm sure, like, there is iconic fights with these two characters, and it's very awesome. And I'm excited to see it play out in the TV show. And, you know, you look at the violence, and I remember for a moment, I was like, oh, yeah, Daredevil was under Marvel Knights at one point, which is almost like they're, like, slightly mature readership.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, so you see it. You see the violence there, and you see it kind of translate. This is pretty extreme, but I don't even know. You look at some comic book stuff back in the day, equitable, you know? So.
Yeah. So just, like, I don't know what more there is to say, except that, like, you won't see this degree of violence in a Marvel movie ever.
Yeah, no.
You know, it's not like the first decapitation we've gotten in a Marvel movie. I mean, I'm thinking of Cap used his shield to decapitate a Chitauri during the Battle of New York, but it's fairly bloodless.
Yeah.
And if it is bloody, then, like, you know, there's, like, purple blood.
And like, it's an alien. That bad, so, but like,
this looks real.
Yes.
This looks very real. And it's just crazy to think about this taking place in that same universe. So I just really like what Marvel's doing with this show. And I really like that they're going for
it. I'm loving it. And like, it leaves me with the same, like, I want more, I want more. But I will say this. It's so, like, that scene is so traumatizing. Like, I've actually rewatched that ending fight at the corridor because it was so awesome.
Yeah.
And this was also awesome. I don't think I can rewatch this.
Oh, I'll rewatch it. I will.
You sick man.
Now that I know it's coming, I'll be okay. But yeah, it was gross. It was terrible. And then, you know, the only other thing to talk about here is Wesley saying, well, you know, like, what do we do with Anatoly's body? Wilson says, take what's left of him and send it to his brother. And what Wesley says, it'll start a war. And Wilson says, I'm counting on it. So he wants to go to war.
And he wants to take them down now. They crossed him.
Is that what this is? Is it personal?
I think it might be. It's personal and business. It's both. It's two birds, one stone, really, with this guy at this point. And I mentioned it before. The Kingpin is a character who's very ruthless at times to get what he wants. And he's sending the body back to his brother. Like, not a nice thing to do.
Not a nice thing to do. But, like, I'm just, I don't know. I mean, it's... why, you know, he has this timetable that needs to be adhered to, and it can be if the Russian thing is dealt with very quickly. So does he take very quickly to mean let's just have like a quick war and wipe these people out and we'll be able to get back to business and like we'll replace the void of the Russians with, I don't know, somebody else?
Maybe it could be a diplomacy is over, yeah. You know, like it very well could be the moment. And I'm deeply curious to see exactly what his end game is.
Yeah, and I bet Fisk is also thinking like, well, these guys can't take care of one man in a mask. What can they do to me?
Yeah,
you know,
which not much from what we just saw.
Yeah. So I mean, listen, if I'm backing one horse, the Russians or the Wilson Fisk train, I'm all aboard the Wilson Fisk train.
You don't want to be against Wilson Fisk. Look what happened.
Every day of the week.
Don't interrupt his dinner either.
No, do not. Or his dessert. Say the way, he ate too much, but he still wants more. All right, so that's going to do it for episode 4. Anything else that we didn't touch on?
I think
we're good.
I think we hit all the paces for this one.
Yeah.
All right. Again, a shock from that last scene.
Yeah, crazy. All right, so the next episode, World on Fire. Kevin and I, we will get back together once you're good and comfortable in Los Angeles, once you've settled in.
Which by this time, I hope I am.
Hopefully that's happening as you guys are listening to this. We'll get back into it and try to stick to the daily Daredevil podcast here. If not, maybe a day in between. And if that's the case, maybe we could release a back-to-back. So we'll see. You know, we'll make it up to you if we miss a day. But no, this was a crazy episode. Really ridiculous. So if you guys have anything about the episode you wanna hear us talk about, or if you're up to episode 5 and you've got questions about episode 5 that you want to hear about on the episode 5 podcast, let us know. You can subscribe to what we're doing, postshowrecaps.com/iTunes. You can leave comments in our comment section. You can send them to us. postshowrecaps.com/feedback is a great way to do that. You can leave a voicemail if you'd like, postshowrecaps.com/voicemail, or you can tweet to Kevin and I. Kevin is at Kev Mahadeo. No need to spell it out. You know how to spell it by now. I'm at Round Howard, like Ron Howard, but rounder. And if we've got a hashtag for this episode, I think it's going to be pretty easy.
Blair.
The noise that my cat makes when he vomits, and the name of the relationship that we are shipping between Matt and Claire. That's M-L-A-I-R-E. So yes. Give us some Blair on the Twitters, and send us your questions, and we will see you guys soon to talk about episode 5 of Daredevil on our daily Daredevil podcast here on Post Show Recaps. Take care, everybody.